Hey, podcast listeners, this is Todd Finley, the founder of HBCU Grad. We're back with another episode. This conversation is a conversation I had with Dr. Kimberly Wise White, who's a dynamic scientist who's a triple HBCU grad. I'm sure you'll get some value out of this conversation. But before we get started and before we get into the episode, I want to either introduce you or remind you of a great way to watch live HBCU sports, and that's on HBCU Go. Do me a favor, and while you're listening to this episode, go to HBCUGo.tv, and from there you'll be able to watch HBCU football now and HBCU basketball once the season starts. You can watch it on your phone, via computer, on your TV, on Roku, on Amazon Fire TV, or Apple TV. It's a cool platform amplifying HBCU excellence. HBCUGo.tv. Again, HBCUGo.tv. Without further ado, here's the episode. All right. Today we have Dr. Kimberly Wise White, who is the Vice President of Regulatory and Technical Affairs at the American Chemistry Council. Dr. White, I want to go back to your childhood. How was your upbringing?
It was great. I mean, I had two fantastic parents and I was a curious child. And so, I mean, I don't have any complaints, I guess, about growing up, right? I grew up in the county. So part of that time was spent in Delaware and then the majority of that in Virginia.
Okay. Now, were you one of those, did your homework right when you got home and was really into the books? Did you find out that fiction was your thing or did you find out nonfiction? Did you love science early? Talk to me about, were you into sports? Did you have siblings? Give me a little bit more context to that.
Yeah, so I was one of those straight and narrow kids. So I definitely was the studious type, did my homework right when I came home, but I was also an athlete. So I ran track all through my younger years into college. I got a track scholarship, which is how I paid for my undergraduate degree. Both were a track and then also with volleyball. And so I did both. Like I said, I was a curious kid, introspective and kind of thoughtful. And my love of science started really, really early on. I think when I was about 8 or 9, I got one of those red microscopes as a gift from my parents. And I loved it, right? I mean, they knew that I was kind of into science and they bought that microscope. And I spent hours and hours and hours looking at things underneath of that microscope. And that just blossomed into, you know, what I wanted to do. So it was funny, like I was probably one of those kids that always knew I wanted to go into science, like right from the beginning. I just was always curious about what was happening in the world and how I could kind of be a part of it and figure it out. So I was always asking questions and trying to find the answers. So,
you know, we were outside July 4th this weekend with the family, and that was my first time really seeing the Big Dipper.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it took me 40 years to find the Big Dipper. So you can see I'm not a science person, but as we talked before, my sister is. Now, when you're looking at mentees and you're looking at people that are growing in school, what are some leading indicators that will let you know that they will probably be good in science?
It's those that ask questions, right? Those that are trying to seek out answers and that are really trying to figure things out. I mean, for science, you got to be thoughtful, but you also have to be factual. You have to kind of look for the answer and then try to make everybody else kind of understand, here's what the data and the information is telling me. And so if you kind of are always seeking out information, that usually makes for a really good scientist. You have to like to research and read. So as long as you like to read information, you know, I spend lots of time reading all the time. I've always had a love of reading as well. And I think that's added to, you know, my love of science. And so I know, like, because I started my love of science really early, I have a niece who's 8 and I gave her her first microscope as well at the same age. So I was like, here you go. I was like, to start it right now. And she's just like me. She loves science. She loves to read. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that I'll bring her into the science field as she gets older, too. So.
Do you think that love of school and being studious, does that have to be in you or can someone kind of put that into you? So is it a talent or a skill?
I think it's a, you learn it, right? So I think there are some people that are just naturally inclined to, you know, love school, love learning, love to be studious. And then there's others that, you know, they figure it out along the way. So they have to be disciplined, right? They have to have someone that kind of sits them down and says, this is really important. I need you to focus time and attention. And, you know, what I've found is that you just have to find something that you love. Like, so not everybody's going to love science like I do, but they might love math or art. And if you can get them to understand, you know, something that's exciting to them, then they will spend hours and hours on what that thing is. I mean, I found, you know, there's that old saying that if you find something that you love, you never work a day in your life. And I'm one of those people that I can honestly say, like, I use science every day. I love it, right? And I rarely get bored in what I do. So, I mean, it is kind of enjoyable because you know that, you know, I will read something exciting like every day.
Why did you choose Texas Southern and how was your experience?
Yeah, so my journey to Texas Southern was actually probably different from most. I went to Texas Southern purely because I got a track scholarship. So it was a money decision 100%. It was a school that offered me the most money to go to school for free. And so I could go. My parents wouldn't have to pay anything for me to go to school. And so that was like the number one thing that made that decision. There wasn't anyone in my life that said, oh, you should definitely go to an HBCU or you should attend Texas Southern. It was purely one of the schools that came through the list of schools that I was applying to. And I went out on a recruiting visit there. The recruiting visit that I attended was right during their TSU relay. So I'm a track runner. And so I was out there for a track, you know, track scholarship visit. And so they had all of the top athletes that were there at an invitational at the university that were there. And so it was just like a fantastic experience overall. And so I was like, well, this is probably where I should go, right? And it's free, so why not?
What did you run in track?
So I was a field events person. So I did long jump, triple jump, and high jump, but I also ran the 400. And so, and I did relays as well, but I had a unique experience because I tore three ligaments in my knee when I was a junior in high school. And so when I went off to college, I was actually rehabbing. And that was also one of the reasons that really led to me going to Texas Southern. The coach was fantastic. And when I went in my recruiting visit, he said to me, well, I want you to be here and I want you to get an education. And he says, I want to rehab you. I hope your knee gets back to the way it was. He was like, but if it never does, he was like, you will get a solid education here. And that sold me 100% because why wouldn't I go somewhere that the coach was just dedicated into his students already coming in as student athletes? So.
You know, I know along the journey of your career, you've probably made a lot of hiring decisions, probably a lot of great hires, and, you know, but everyone gets it wrong a lot. Do you look at athletes and some of the skills and the discipline that athletes develop through their career? And do you think there is any type of, how should I say it? Do you think that athletes have a leg up because of the discipline and the ability to work in teams and the ability to be competitive? Do you think that athletes have a leg up once they get into their careers?
Yeah, I do. I mean, discipline is a really strong component of athletic careers, right? Regardless of whether or not you transition from being on your youth, you know, baseball or a football team, or you wind up getting a scholarship and playing in college, or you really transition into pro. You learn discipline early on. You learn to be on time. You learn to be respectful. You learn to be deliberate about what you're doing, right? And you learn that you have to be dedicated. And that you have to work for what you want to be successful, right? So you have to show up at practice every day. You have to do the workout. You have to listen to your coach. And so those are things that transition very readily into corporate America or any work career that you have to come in and you have to be really dedicated and motivated towards what you're doing. And so I think, you know, athletes, you know, get that very early on. And so they're able to translate that into their working careers. And it's a much easier transition, I think.
What do you look for in when hiring people to be on your teams to work with you? Are you looking for someone that's competitive? Or are you looking for someone that has the skills that you don't have or where you're weak? Walk me through your thought process in putting a team together. Yeah, that either at this point in your career or what you've developed, as far as building teams in your career.
Well, when you're thinking about a team, right, you want people that work well together, right? So you're looking for people that can build off of each other, people that lend expertise that others don't have, that can benefit the team as a whole. And then you want your team to mesh well. You want them to spur ideas in each other. And so when I look at those that I'm hiring, I want someone that's going to be kind of motivated, that they're going to be engaged with the team, that they're going to be proactive in what they're doing, right? And they're just going to be, I think, not just engaged, like I said, with the team, but really want to be involved with the people that they're working with. And so I don't know everything, right? I know a very small slice of what I have expertise in. So I always want to hire people that know something different and more than I do, so that they're an expert in their area, so that I can rely on them, they can rely on me, and that together we grow, and our team grows.
Now, you seem very humble. Where does this humility stem from? Because I find that a lot of high achievers are extremely humble.
So it's funny that you say I'm humble. I guess that's just who I am, right? It doesn't feel like humility to me. I think it just feels like a normal course of business. I mean, I had, amazing opportunities through my life, which has got me to where I am. And, my goal is to, I don't need to talk about it, right? Like, I think we talked at the beginning, like, I don't go out of my way to tell people that I have a doctorate degree. They know or they don't know, right? And that's fine. And, it's really about like doing the work, right? And who needs accolades? You don't need accolades. It's really about getting the work done. And it doesn't matter if those if people know that I did the work or someone else did the work, as long as it gets done and we can move on to the next thing. I think that that's all I really care about. I like to give, accolades to people that I work with, right? Because I think everybody likes to know that they're doing a good job, right? And that they've made it to a certain point in their life. But for me personally, I mean, it's just, I'm happy to be where I am. I'm striving to get to the next place. And so it doesn't feel, like I said, like humility. It just feels like that's just kind of the normal course of business for me.
Makes sense. Well, we're about to brag. Tell me the different degrees you have.
So I have a bachelor's of science in biology. I have a master's of science in biology, and then I have a doctorate in environmental toxicology. And I got all of those from Texas Southern University, HBCU, triple time grad. So I must love HBCUs if I stayed for, 3 degrees.
I hear a lot of double. I don't hear a lot of triple degrees from HBCU. That's a big deal. We got to make some type of Hall of Fame about that. Now, walk me through your journey after graduating. So you went straight through and got all your degrees without taking a break?
So pretty much, so I got my bachelor's straight away, and then I actually spent a year in pharmacy school. So I always knew I wanted to be a scientist. Once I got my bachelor's degree in biology, I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to go to medical school, if I wanted to go to graduate school, if I wanted to go to pharmacy school. And so when I came home over the summer after I graduated with my undergrad, I took a job at a hospital working in the pharmacy. And so I said, well, working with pharmacists, maybe a good point of view should be to go to pharmacy school. So I spent a year in pharmacy school and I just wasn't intrigued. It didn't, the curiosity that I had in science from when I was younger and all through undergrad was not there when I was in pharmacy school. And so I went and I decided, I was like, maybe I'll go to grad school instead. And from the moment I started grad school, like, the curiosity was back, like from day one. And so I was like, yeah, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. And so I basically took like a year in pharmacy school, and then I transitioned into my master's program. And then I basically did my master's and my PhD program on a similar time track. So I did both of them in 4 years.
Wow.
Well, five, yeah, 5 years, I think. So,
Wow.
yeah.
So after that, after you got your PhD, What was the next step? Walk me through exactly how you got to where you are today professionally.
Yeah, so really like advice and mentorship. So I had a fantastic advisor in my graduate school. And when I was doing my graduate degree, I always thought I was going to work in a research lab. I love science. I worked in a research lab all through graduate school. I had took some time and actually worked part-time at a research lab while I was in graduate school. And so I always thought I was going to just work in a research lab. And he said, you should take an internship doing policy work. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of boring, right? It's not like the hardcore research in the lab. And I did. And I loved it. I loved the policy work. And I was very lucky because my graduate degree, my environmental toxicology degree, is environmental toxicology. It's biology and chemistry and environmental policy. So it's all of those in one. So it's like kind of the love of all sciences, like the trifecta of science. And so once I graduated, I took a postdoc. So generally, people that graduate with doctorate degree, they take a postdoctorate at a university. And so I took a postdoc right away, doing a glioblastoma related research at the Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, where I grew up. And I said, oh yeah, so after I'd done the policy related internship, I was like, the research just was a little flat to me. And so I was looking again for the same excitement that I had when I was working with my advisor in graduate school and undergrad. And so I said, well, maybe I need to take a job doing something that's a little more compliance related. And so I took a position at a company, at a delicatessen company, doing their environmental compliance for their corporate offices and their manufacturing offices. And I loved it. I did air, water, and waste. I did, walking around, making sure that the water that they were utilizing was sufficient, that they were, having clean water, clean air. So it was a fantastic experience. And so after that, I had the opportunity to do some work as a consultant for the federal government. And it was still compliance related. And so this was right around the time when all of the compliance was going into place, which what you could and couldn't take on an airplane for those, 3 ounces or less, basically. And so I was working as a consultant for the federal government during that time where we had to figure out what to do with all the things that you can't take on a plane. And so it was a really interesting time. And again, I was just continued to be excited about the work. And then after that, I had an opportunity to get engaged in policy work. Because remember, I told you my advisor from graduate school had told me you should really try to do some science policy work. And I took an internship in at the State Department at that time. And so I said, well, maybe I'll think about trying to go back to do some policy work and interface between science and policy. And I had the opportunity to work at an association prior to the job that I have now. And I loved it because it is a natural fit between science, research, and actual policy that helps impact regulations and standards. And so that's really what I do now is I spend time really looking at how, chemicals interact with the environment and human health and making sure that science underlies everything that we do. And so it's just like a fantastic interface overall. And so my journey, because of my degree, is multidisciplinary. I've had the opportunity to do lots of very different things, but I've always been excited about those different things. And like I said, it's led me to this company where I've been at the American Chemistry Council for almost 12 years now.
That's a fun journey and an interesting journey because it's something that we don't hear about how someone navigates to the upper echelons in science after getting a PhD. And I know via business, things come from a lot of different angles, and mostly is not because of advertising or just the straight transactional. It's usually more of a holistic approach of how people find you and how relationships develop. How do you find those jobs? Do you go on Indeed and say, hey, there's a science job? Or is it from your mentors and mentees? Or is it from mentors, excuse me? Or is it because you're so good and you're so good at what you do, your reputation precedes you?
It's a little bit of all three. And so I definitely, just like everyone else, do searches, when I'm looking for a new opportunity. But a lot of it has been through interactions with mentors or colleagues that I've had. And so where you're working with them in another capacity, and they see the work that you're doing in the current capacity, and they say, oh, well, you know, I think I know of an opening that exists here at this other company. I think you'd be a great fit. So you might think about, you know, engaging there or applying. And so opportunities will come that way for me. And so that's how it's been, you know, over the last couple of years, those opportunities have come more organically. But, you know, that's why mentorship and kind of making connections with colleagues, I think, is so important, is because you never know where kind of the next interesting job is going to come from. Like the original job that got me into kind of science and policy now came exactly that way, where I was working with a colleague on something completely unrelated to science and policy. And they said, you know, this is something that I think you'd be great at. You should take a look at this position. And it kind of led me to where I am now.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to ask something a little selfish. And I don't think from a, I don't think we talk enough about interdisciplinaries, interdisciplines, and how they work well together. So from a business perspective, how can a business use a scientist, and why do businesses need scientists?
Well, I mean, if you think about science, some people think about science just as like base level biology, right? And so, but science intersects with everything. So just think about like if you're working with a tech company, right? And so they need people that understand how cables work. They need engineers that can actually put cables and things together. They need chemists, right? So chemists that actually build different specific molecules that will go in making products or make paints, or, you know, make, you know, your computer. Everybody loves their computer. Everybody loves their phone. Well, how do you get the circuits? Well, one, you need actual chemistries that are going into making the things that make the circuits, right? And then you need electronic boards. You need someone to actually know how to put together electronic boards. You need a mathematician to run the stats to ensure that what they're making is actually going to work, right? And so scientists are just, you know, important overall. I mean, I know that, you know, if you look at some of the statistics that exist, like if you study science, technology, engineering, and math, you are likely to make about 50% more than non-STEM majors when they go out into the workforce. We also know that over the next 10 years, we're expected to see about 1 million jobs added related to the STEM disciplines. And so, like, here's where it's at. It's like if you really are looking for a long-term financial career, science, technology, and engineering math is a real benefit, right? And there's so much you can do. I mean, if I look at my own career, right, someone that usually would start out with a biology degree, they think, well, they'll just work in a research lab like I did. Like I was like, well, that's all I'm going to do. And now I am working at an association that works with like 190 of the leading companies in the chemical industry. I travel all around the country, right? And I get to work on science and policy directly with federal agencies and Congress. And so who would have thought, like, when, you know, you're in school as an undergrad, that you're working on, you know, biology in a lab, working on an experiment, that you would have the opportunity to testify before a Senate committee. And so those are things that science has led me to. And I tell people all the time that you never know where science is going to lead you. I mean, my science degree has taken me all the way to Israel, to Italy. And so, and that's just because of a love of science to be able to travel to all these different places and be able to leverage it. And so I think businesses are really, you know, it's important for them to understand the value that they have for science, even when you think that science is not something that you need. It probably is. Like, you probably need someone that just understands some of these like core elements. I mean, and I work in the chemical industry, and one of the things that's so important for us is that we're really looking to make sure that we're diversifying our industry over time. And so when we look at the chemical industry, only about 25-26% are representative of minorities in our industry. And so we recognize that we have to take an active and targeted approach to bring more diversity in our industry, right? And we have to be really dedicated towards the effort. And so that's one of the reasons that a couple of years ago, we started an effort called the Future of STEM Scholars Initiative. And it really is meant to bring new and diverse voices, underrepresentation, into science, technology, and engineering math, because like I said, my love is science. And so I'm always, you know, I'm always trying to get people, more people engaged in STEM disciplines to bring them and get them excited and interested in STEM, but then hopefully bring them into the chemical industry so that we can have that diversity of thought long-term over time. And so where I'm really excited about this program because we're 2 years in now, and it's focused on high school seniors that are going to be incoming freshmen in their college matriculation, and they have to go to an HBCU. So this is, again, where you know, you guys' mission comes in. It's just really focused on getting more HBCU grads, right? And so I'm excited because we have right now 295 students that are currently matriculating at HBCUs because of our scholarship. And so this gives them $40,000, so $10,000 a year, each one of them. It gives them leadership development training, and it gives them access to internship opportunities and puts them directly in touch with chemical industry sponsors. And so, you know, we get to have engagement with them, kind of tell them about the industry and help them grow over those 4 years.
When you look at a mentee, what are you looking for?
Just someone that is eager, quite frankly, and open and honest. I mean, I think, you know, when you're looking for someone that is trying to figure out who they want to be, right? I mean, a lot of mentees are really young, right? If I think about like our students in the program, I mean, they're incoming freshmen. And so they're just, some of them are just leaving home, right? So it's first time away from home, first time kind of in a college setting, in a dorm, living with someone else. I want someone that just can be open and honest and wanting to learn, right? And so just wanting to ask questions about like, why are things the way they are? How can I change? How can I help? How can I grow? I mean, I think those make the best mentees because they help you be better mentors.
If you had unlimited time, because I know with you being so curious and I'm the same way, I wish I could just work on so many different things. If you had unlimited time, what are some important things within, let's say, STEM that you would be working on?
Well, I mean, there's so many, right? If you have unlimited time, right? I mean, I think everybody is looking at sustainability. And so everybody wants to make sure that we have clean air, clean water, and that we're lowering emissions, right? A lot of people are worried about climate change and impacts. And so that's where you'll dedicate your time, is making sure that you're building and creating and innovating new technologies so that we continue to bring down air emissions, that we continue to evolve our clean water. I mean, here in the United States, clean water is just a fact of life in most areas, but there are still some areas of our country that have problem with water infrastructure. And so, you know, that's one of the great benefits of working in our industry, is that that's what we do. Like, we build the chemistries that improve those processes. And so I'd spend a lot of time doing that. I think the other thing, honestly, is what I get to do every day, which is work with students and get them excited, right? Because the new ideas will come from these future leaders, right? So these are the people now that are going to have the ideas of the future. So when you're looking at, you know, who's going to cure diabetes, right? Who's going to create, you know, a new technology that we're all going to be, you know, waiting to use and can't live without, right? That's being developed right now. And hopefully those are people that we're working with right now. These are the young freshmen, sophomores, juniors in high school that are saying, you know what, this is important to me. Like, how can I help solve this problem? So that's where I'd spend my time, is like any time I can spend like this, you know, talking and getting people excited about science, and getting them engaged and hopefully having them be the leaders for tomorrow that helps shape what we do, I think is no better way to spend your time.
Now, you guys have more than 60 companies have signed on to support scholarships through FOSSI. How do you find these companies? I'm always interested in the how. Is it from relationships? Is it outreach, or is it mostly inbound?
So we have a great group of founding partners initially. So when we kicked off FOSSI, we worked with HBCU Week Foundation, who has a great mission to, get more students into HBCUs overall. We worked with the Chemours Company, who is right, based there, in Delaware. And so they're a chemical company that works very closely with ACC. And then we also have the American Institute of Chemical Engineers. And so the four of us really came together. And so when you look across our organizations, we represent a number of members of the chemical industry. I mean, our organization, the American Chemistry Council, represents over 190 chemical companies. So we look at the chemical companies that we represent, right? We're looking to change the face of our industry. And so we're starting at home. We're saying, well, you were here. Like, if we want to make sure that we have, enough scientists, technology and engineering and mathematics people to be able to bring into our industry, right? I remember I said 1 million jobs we're expecting to hit overall over the next 10 years. If you want to fill those, you have to start with the companies here. And so between like our organization and the American Institute for Chemical Engineers, who has a wealth of members, individual members, but also companies, it's like we look there first to identify the industry members that would participate and sponsor this program. And like you said, we've got over 60 members now, and we're continuing to get more. We've already raised about $17 million for this program so far. And we have a pretty ambitious goal that we want to fund 1,000 students by 2025. Like I said, we're a little under halfway there. We're at 295 now. So hopefully we'll be at 500 here soon. And then we'll be well onto our goal for 1,000. But it really is starting at home with the companies that we work with every day.
If someone wants to get involved or learn more information, how can they get in touch with you or FOSSI?
Yes, yeah, so we have a website, futureofstemscholars.org. And so they can visit us right there. They can find out, they can actually see all of our 295 scholars. They can see some of the stories there of each one of them. They can see where they're going to school. They can find out information about how to participate in the program as well, how to fund the program. And then for your students on the line that will likely be listening to this. So the application process for 2022 opens up in September 23rd. And so that's the next opportunity for students to actually apply for FOSSI for funding for hopefully their matriculation as freshmen in the college next year.
Dr. Wright, I want to say I'm proud of you. What you've accomplished in your career speaks volume of who you are. Speaks volume of who raised you. Then you're still focused on giving back. I really just really want to say I'm proud of you and to keep going. I know oftentimes you get to a place and you don't have those people saying, "Hey, I'm proud of you." I don't know where you've come from, but I know where you've come from because you came from a HBCU and you came from a small town almost like I did. So I want to wish you the best going forward in your career and in your life.
Well, I appreciate that, Todd. And, I didn't get where I am without a lot of help, right? And so, I had scholarships along the way myself that shaped the career that I had. I had fantastic mentors, great parents, a great support system. And I want to do whatever I can to help other people have that same experience. And so we can do that through scholarships, through mentorship, through just engagement like this. I mean, I am all for it, because like I said, it's without us, right? The next generation may not get there. And so anything that we can do to help them, I think we should.
We need more people like you, Dr. White. Keep on keeping on.
No, thanks so much, Todd.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.